Hi, I'm Sean. I've always had a passion for personal growth and a curiosity for life's profound questions. I created this show as a platform dedicated to inspiring change through thoughtful and insightful conversation. There's a lot happening in our world today. Some of it clear, some of it confusing. My goal with these conversations is to leave you feeling better and more informed about the state of our world in these challenging times. I'd like to invite you to think outside the lines. When I started the show back in 2015, Donald Trump was a mere blip on the political radar, and the political landscape wasn't nearly as tumultuous as it has become in 2023. Through the political chaos in the US, a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic, I took a break from the show for a while because I wasn't sure what I wanted to say or how to use a platform like this at all, let alone responsibly. My goal for the show has always been to provide a platform of inspiration and to challenge perspectives on how we see the world, and more importantly, how we might make the world a better place for everyone. So it is through that lens that I return with these new episodes, featuring conversations on topics that matter to me with folks who have a similar perspective on life. And when I do give voice to those who might not share my perspective on something, my goal is to drive the conversation forward in a civil, productive way, and from the perspective that we're all sharing this crazy experience called life together. And the goal for all of us should be to leave things better than we found them. I hope that's how you see the world too, and I hope that these conversations will leave you better and smarter. In this first series of episodes, I'm speaking with three thoughtful and intelligent women in my life about the current political landscape here in the United States, where I live and record my show. You'll hear from three different people from diverse backgrounds, all of whom have a unique perspective on where we are, where they would like to be, and how we might get there. Politics is an incredibly important topic in our lives, regardless of your background. It's a topic that was rather taboo once upon a time, but not anymore. We've become so polarized and dug into our beliefs that it's often hard to hear through all the noise. I thought it would be interesting to step away from the traditional political pundits that you're likely used to hearing, and instead turn our attention to everyday Americans, their stories, and their insights on how we might reconcile our differences. I know these can often feel like treacherous and impossible times, but I believe that together, through thoughtful and intelligent conversation, we can find the common ground that unites all of us and work towards a brighter, more inclusive future for everyone. I thank you for listening and for daring to think outside the lines. Next up, my conversation with Angela.
Hi, my name is Angela and I live in Santa Monica. I am a United States Navy veteran. I served 8 years during Operation Desert Storm and Operation Desert Shield. I served stateside at a Naval Air Station facility. So I'm coming with a lived experience from having dealt with crisis intervention, crisis management. I also come from the lived experiences of being a single mom of three daughters, two of which have graduated from college, and my youngest one is a rising junior. I am also a community activist here in Southern California. And so from that space, I believe in being the voice for the voiceless, being the voice for those who are underrepresented and have been marginalized.
How would you describe the current political landscape in the United States, and what factors do you think have contributed to the way things are?
We are looking at a completely conservative group of our public leaders who are truly not thinking about the voices of our diverse population. First of all, when you weigh in this decision regarding Roe versus Wade and how it got turned back because we have a group that now decides that this is wrong and we're going to implement new laws across the states that tells you, you no longer have access to reproductive health. You are setting up such a generational tragedy. And it's not just the marginalized that are affected. If you think about it, professionals, young and middle-aged professionals who are at a quandary regarding whether or not they want to have a child at this time. And it is not up to lawmakers, it should be up to that individual whether or not they carry out that pregnancy. There are so many even variables that go into whether or not a woman can fully carry a child to term, right? Without harming, again, herself or the child. So when we start making all of these laws regarding who can and cannot have abortions, and also who can and cannot have access to equitable reproductive health, not only does it affect that individual, but it affects the community, the country, the world at large, because these are all generational, impactful decisions that should not be left to the hands of a few, just rolling back the ability to have an abortion and henceforth the ability to have equitable reproductive health is problematic. Number two, yesterday's decision regarding affirmative action with respect to how that rolls out within colleges and universities is mind-boggling. And I have to be quite honest, I was saddened. I was extremely tearful.
Sorry to interrupt you for just a second, but I want to provide a little bit of context here. Ooh. So we are having this conversation at the end of the week where the Supreme Court made a ton of really significant rulings in this country. Specifically, you're referring to the affirmative action ruling in schools. And I would actually love if you could maybe talk a little bit about, maybe provide a little bit more context. What is affirmative action? How is it relevant here? And why is this, and you've touched upon it a bit, but why is it so harmful that this ruling was made this week in this way?
Affirmative action is basically designed to provide broader opportunities for minorities to get admitted into schools, right? And this goes back to how the admissions process is set up. And so when you self-identify within the questions are, what is your race, you know, or what is your gender, that allows them to see how you rank in the population of how many of X demographics are attending the school and how we can ensure that we have a fair number across the line.
Diverse applicants,
you know,
right?
Say we have, exactly, diverse applicants.
There's a really important discussion in there because I think a lot of people just assume that, like, you know, X amount of scholarships are handed out to people of various, you know, diverse backgrounds just because to meet a quota, right? Absolutely not. These people that are being admitted to these colleges, oftentimes they're getting this ability because of this in ways that maybe other people wouldn't, but they've still done the work. They've still got the grades. It's not a matter of giving people a handout per se. It's taking a look at across the board and saying, we want to make sure that we're being equitable here, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially, like you say, for example, like one of my daughters, when she applied to multiple schools, she had a 3.9 GPA. In addition to being a student athlete, which is huge, right? However, you know, top tier schools like UCLA, she didn't make the cut. She did end up going to Loyola Marymount, which is a private university. These students are coming with the academic achievements behind them to show and to demonstrate that they are capable of doing the work. She also had taken AP classes, right? So advanced placement, English, science, right? Like these are, and again, when we talk about what it takes to apply, what they're looking for, has the student completed 3 years of a foreign language? Have they completed 3 years of a science? What have they completed prior to applying? These students have done all of that. And doing all of that exactly when you're applying to a school that is known for being non-diverse, what we call PWI, which is primarily white institution, they are known for only having a small amount of diverse students there. So when the students apply there, there needs to be some benchmark. Again, a benchmark of, yes, we have X amount of this, of these students from this ethnicity. Yes, we have this amount of students from that ethnicity. So it really goes, it's just another level of self-identification. We've read your personal statement. We know what your report card reads. We know what your GPA is. We know what your SAT and ACT scores are, you know, if it's still relevant. This is just another way of self-identifying who you are. And this is a key, crucial way to ensure that we have a diverse population.
And I think it's really important to talk about diversity, right? Because I think that it's a word that's thrown around a lot, you know, in the modern age, and I think especially in the States. And I think that it's obviously very important, but I don't think a lot of people truly understand why. What is diversity? And we can talk about, you know, DE&I and all those initiatives, you know, based on that word, but why is it important to have diversity in the educational system, for example?
So, and thank you for asking that, because that is a wonderful question. Diversity is basically explaining that we all have, none of us are a monolith, right? Like, I am not the speaker for the African American or Afro Latina population. I am not that one. No one is that one. We all have different lived experiences. You know, we all come from various economic, social statures. So diversity says everyone is valued for who they are based on their ethnicity, their sexual identity, their religious identity. Everyone is valued for who they are. And we need you to really create a broader mindset. Because the problem is, when you keep folks out of the conversation, then your conversation becomes narrow-minded. But when you allow more, like they say, voices to the table, more voices into the conversation, that drives innovation, ideation. It gives a broader perspective of how we can move forward. Like, say, for example, a tech company, right? Where you have a real diverse platform. You have folks that, you know, come from India, right? And come from Europe and come from Africa. And they all come with a different vision of what technology means to them. Think about how powerful that is when you get all of those different perspectives and you work to create change, and you also work to create amazing features and platforms and services, because they come with these different perspectives of, they know how technology works for their people from where they're at and what's interesting, what's not, what they're looking to learn and to gain. And when you knowledge share at that optimal level, there's nothing but innovation.
So this is exactly what I wanted to talk to you, because I love the way that you state that. And I think, you know, obviously, from my perspective, this is a really important conversation, but I want to talk to someone who has lived it and who has, you know, someone who is actively trying to make things better from this perspective, right? What I would love to do really quickly, though, is because you've provided that context, like that general context, I'd love to tie it back to this ruling this week, right? And why is that so devastating to this particular circumstance in this context that you've provided?
Because when you look at the fact that we are still not where we should be with respect to equitable education and access to education, then it just becomes extremely problematic. And I say that from the stance of looking at Yale and looking at Harvard, right, and how students are, quote unquote, selected to go to such schools, there becomes these caste systems that lead back to accessibility. And how can someone from 8 Mile in Detroit ever have access to going to Yale, although they may graduate as a valedictorian? When they go to apply to Yale, they, number one, most likely will not have the money to afford to be there unless they can get scholarships and student loans. But at the very core of it, because affirmative action all also goes back to the types of loans and grants, Pell Grants and things like that, that are available.
What do you say to folks? Because a common argument that you hear, and it's typically on the right, but a common argument is, well, those kids will still find a way on their own merits without this assistance.
Here's what I think folks are missing. Nowadays, because there is so much technology that's available, and a lot of students are like, well, you know, if I can't get in there, I'm just going to be that entrepreneur that I wanted to be anyway, forget school, you know, and go about doing something different, right? But when they do that different thing, they aren't, for the most part, truly understanding the how and the why of how to be an entrepreneur without having that full book sensibility, strategizing, marketing, finances, right? What are our profit and loss statements? These are the things that when that are available in education, like then what is the other way, right? Because this was our first, as they say in the military, first line of response was, I'm going to apply, hopefully through affirmative action, I'll get that second look. And with that, I will get the finances to be able to afford to attend the school without taking out $200,000
in
loans.
What I'm hearing you say is that it's about opportunity, right? First and foremost. But I think also of course, any person with determination can go on to be successful in their life. They'll find a way, right? But to your point, education is the gateway into that experience. And with the education, you will be exponentially more successful, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, and that's the thing too. It's like, we still have families, like I said, you know, because we still have a high poverty rate. We still do. And especially coming out of COVID, right? And so you're looking at that. You're looking at how the landscape of incomes have changed across the line. Where our entire cost of living is astronomical at this point, right? Where you have, how can a family of five survive on $80,000 a year? You know, and that's split between two parents, impossible, right? So how can that same family of five help pay for their children to attend college? That's like, these are the things that having that perspective and that understanding, our Supreme Court, and I'll just say the not the three.
The majority, the Supreme Court majority.
But
right?
The other, yes, not my lovely dissenters, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson, but the others, they don't have a clue on what it means to, as they say, have more month than money. They have no clue of what that even means when you have 14 days left and you're $0. How are you paying for gas? How are you paying for food in the fridge? And oh my goodness, right? It's like, these are the things that they have no knowledge about because if they do, they don't care.
Well,
they don't care. And these are the same students that want to have academic access, but they're being shut down now.
Shut out, right? They're being shut,
for getting
being shut out of the system in a lot of ways.
And so here's it. And here's what's so fundamentally important about all of this. What happens when you get a good education? You get a good job. Like, that's supposed to be the golden rule, right? You must have at least a college education if you want to make more than 60 grand a year. I'll just put it out like that, right? If you want to make more than $60,000 a year in most states across the U.S., you need to have a college
education.
Well,
let's not even get into the topic of how to pay for that college education, because that's another issue that we had to deal with this week. Yeah.
Right. But here's the thing. You have to have a gateway to get there. And if all your gates are shut down, how are you going to get in? Because we all can't climb that fence. And we're not all about trying to dig a hole under the fence. So how are we going to make this work? How can we drive, even from a technology standpoint, how can we in the U.S. drive innovation if we're not allowing for education? In most other countries, if you think about it, they invest in their people, meaning they give them the educational foundations to help build the country as a whole. And then a lot of them, what happens, comes to the U.S., extends that education, and they either return to the country and build it up, or they stay here and help build us. But the key factor is having the education and the wherewithal to do so. It's so important that in order for any country, any community to grow, any company to grow, you have to invest in the people. Education is the way to invest in people.
So I was going to, one of the questions that I'm asking in these conversations is what issues you're particularly passionate about. I feel like you have clarified a lot of that. So I'm going to move on. What I do want to talk about, though, is the increasing polarization and divisiveness in this country, especially as it pertains to politics. I want to know from your perspective, how is that impacting our ability to address key issues effectively? So you bring up all of these great points, right? Or all these really important topics. How do we find common ground here? How do we resolve any of this when we're so divided?
Well, here's the thing. And this is where, like, to your point, polarization is live and well and continues to grow. These recent rulings will continue polarizing us, rolling back Roe versus Wade, polarized us, rolling back affirmative action, polarized us. So you look at all of that and you continue to say, how can we move towards a happy medium when major rulings and decisions are affecting the marginalized and the underrepresented? Polarizing decisions. These are all the things that continue to draw us all away from each other and create these smaller warring factions. You know, it's back to conquer and divide. Instead of pulling us together and figuring out the why. Why can't we be friends and figuring out how we can all move and grow and be
together? So what is the solution?
The solution is, first and foremost, we have to go back to valuing each other, right? Like, we need to, if we're really trying to be that diverse, inclusive country where everyone feels welcome and they feel like they belong, put your money where your mouth is. And how do you do that? You put people in office that speak truly for us and not against us. And I say us, meaning all of us, not just the finer few, but all of us, all of our lived experiences, all of us based on our religion, based on our ethnicity, based on our sexual orientation, all of us. All of us need to be in the room where decisions are made, and yet you continue to close the door on us. We have to get in that room. We have to sit at that table, and we have to be able to make the decisions that are going to affect, I'm getting teary-eyed now, that are going to affect, because I think about my kids and I think about this generational impact that's happening on them now. You know, you're taking away, they're taking away my daughter's access to reproductive health, and you're telling her you're going to monitor her periods in order to let her know whether or not she can conceive and when she can. What if she doesn't want to, right? Like, these are all of these oppressive behavior that we have to cease and desist on, because it's sad when you think about it. Like, how did we get here? Those that want to create change, the diverse voices that want to make a difference, are being attacked monetarily, academically,
yeah, and so socially. The thing that I think is really fascinating, and I think, you know, you and I are similar age, and I feel like in our lifetimes, mm-hmm. I feel like we're going backward to a large extent, right? And it felt like for so long that we had made so much progress. And of course, there's always progress to be made, right? And I'm not trying to pretend that we were, you know, in this perfect utopia. But I think that, you know, there were civil rights acts that were passed. There were, you know, gay marriage protection. There's all these things that we've seen in our lifetimes. The first Black president, right? Like, we've achieved so much, but at the same time, it feels like so many things are being taken away and we're being driven backward. And it's like, how do we reconcile that? It's so hard to.
I mean, that is the question of the hour. How do we reconcile, again, when we have lawmakers that, let's just say it, misogynist, racist, call them for what they are. We have to take a look at these lawmakers, and we have to implement a moral compass, because I feel like the moment we put that moral compass up there and we start saying, okay, we're measuring, here's our benchmark, here's what we're doing.
Part of the reason we are where we are today is because there are bad actors, specifically, you know, in politics, who are enabling a lot of this behavior, and it's some of the worst behavior imaginable, right? And I don't even have to name names. I mean, I think it's pretty evident to anyone that's listening, right? And the problem is that there are people that think that way, right? And these people come out in public and they say these things publicly, and it almost makes it okay, right? It almost makes, oh my God, I've been thinking that this person's speaking what I've been thinking, I'm going to support them, right? So.
And you know what goes with that is, the more you hear it, what happens?
Totally.
You become desensitized
totally. To
what they're saying. And then you go from desensitized to
we're all boiling frogs in the pot. What's the analogy?
Yeah. But here's the thing too. And I always say this. At the end of the day, when you have a child does not know of any differences until someone tells them. They don't know that they're Black, all of that, until someone tells them. Here's who you are in this world, and here is how you must operate and behave according to the systems that have been put in place to, quote unquote, protect you and to protect all of us. And this is the way it is, and that's that.
How do you engage in conversation with people who have a different perspective? Because I feel like you're pretty an open-minded person, and you speak to a lot of, you know, people with really diverse backgrounds. How do you engage in conversations with those folks? And do you have any tips for people who, you know, might be struggling with that?
I think, first of all, I look at, you know, because you have to start from, what are you similar in? Like, where are we similar at, right? Like, did we both grow up in California? You know, did you go to a large high school? I went to a large high school. Like, you look at the granular pieces of lived experiences, because you have to start from somewhere where it's similar in order to build out that conversation. Because we have to have a starting point for finding out when things changed for them, right? When they acquired their thought process, when we acquired our own thought process, and how we could circle back to, well, we both are here. We both had a similar background, a similar beginning, or we have similarities right now. Like, find what that common ground is and build from there. and relate it back in conversation to that common ground. Like, yes, for example, you may be, someone may be anti-abortion and another one may be pro-life. But at the end of the day, do we both believe in equitable access to healthcare? Okay, yes, we do. Okay, so then what does that mean to you? And then what does that mean to a person in an impoverished area, right? We got to dig and find out the whys. And a lot of times, I think perspectives are also built on you don't know what you don't know. So if you don't know someone else's lived experience, because why? Because you haven't lived it. And you also, if you haven't taken the time to listen to their lived experience, to at least find empathy, if not sympathy, then we won't find where our middle and common ground is. And we won't find a pathway to get there without having what we call civil discourse. Let's talk about, and in some instances, let's agree to disagree, but at the same time, let's also have an understanding that we have two different perspectives on this same subject. But I want to understand why you think that way. And I would hope that you would want to understand the same about me.
So on that note, what would you like to see more of from people who are on the other side of your beliefs or people that are not you?
I would like to see more of them practicing civil discourse and understanding, getting the root of it. Go around and have discovery conversations, right? Like, you know, nobody does it until it's time for them to run. And then they want to have every town hall possible. You need to be having town halls ahead of time. You need to get back into the community. And so here's the thing that they always talk about when you go in public service, how high do you want to go? Because the higher you go, the what? More disconnected to the root of it you become. So it's going back to the root, going back to the person in the bakery, going back to your child's teacher, remembering to go back and speak to all of these folks to understand what matters for them and why.
I love it. So I know this is a question that you have probably a very passionate answer to. How can people actively engage in the political process and influence this change that you're speaking about and have their voices heard?
I think there's, you know, there's multiple ways to engage. First and foremost, I always say is to get involved, even in nonpartisan groups like, say, the League of Women Voters, right? And I say that because they are nonpartisan, so they will give you both sides of the coin. And they practice civil discourse. They study laws and they study policies to gain a thorough understanding. And then they share that information to, at the end of the day, inform voters. So if you are if you even get their newsletters or, you know, subscribe to nonpartisan groups like that, that's like the gateway of finding understanding without it being one-sided, right? So you have to find that thing. Like, if you're talking about social media, right? And we say, okay, well, stay away from Fox News, right? But, you know, because you ask folks, how do you get your news? Oh, well, I'm on Reddit. Some people are on Reddit. Some people are on CNN. You know, some are on Twitter, right? Like, some people gain their, I think you have to be open about looking in all of those crevices to see what they all say about the same thing, because it also gives you a broader perspective about the same subject matter. And then you look at that broader perspective and you figure out within that how that correlates back to who you are and what are your values, interests, and you know, protocols on that. What do you value and how do you put that into action? If you truly believe that we should leave this world a better place than the one that we inherited, what are you doing to do that in your community? So it's getting engaged at that community level, whether, again, whether you're volunteering at a school, whether you're volunteering at a homeless shelter or a food bank or a women's shelter. Get in the root, because that's where a lot of the conversation begin. And then on top of that, attend, like if you're in, you know, whatever city you're in, attend a lot of their commission meetings, because that's where you also are hearing decisions that are being made about the very city that you live in. And if you have your lived experiences that are counter to what some of those decisions that are being made, then you need to share your voice. Because guess what? Not everybody goes to those meetings. Not everyone shares at that level. Though you'll hear plenty of people complaining, but more people need to be solution driven.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of solution driven, as you know. You talk a lot about your daughters, right? What role do you think that young people and future generations will play in shaping the future of American politics, but also just, you know, the global landscape, and how can we encourage more of their participation?
I think they're going to play a pivotal role, because they're our next generation of leaders. And they're coming, and this is what's so interesting, they're coming from having went from President Obama to 45 to President Biden to whoever's next. Hopefully it'll be Biden. So they've had these different perspectives on how policies and politics has changed over the last several years. So they see it firsthand. They have these conversations, and, you know, and they participate in social media at a higher level than we do. So for them, they are already coming in with very strong opinions. My daughters, even the youngest one in high school, has very strong opinions. So, you know, it's a matter of them taking the baton and running it across the finish line, but bringing their diverse group of friends with them, so that they all at the end of the finish line work together to build a stronger, better America than the one we currently have, which is rolling back the time, you know?
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of hope in that statement, but I'm curious if there's anything else that has you hopeful about all this.
I mean, I'm hopeful that, you know, this same group, which, you know, at the same time have come out, you know, in support of reproductive health, like they're ready. They are ready to get on the front lines and march and stand up. Like they are ready to be the voice. And so my hope is, moving forward past this, that as they continue to help drive innovation within our country, within the world, globally, that, you know, they'll be able to really exceed anything and everything that we've done. And I know they will, because they are coming from a more inclusive background and lived experience than us. Because again, this is the group that everyone is open to transgender surgery. You know what I mean? Like, this is that group. They're just trying to what? Convince the big people at the other table that it's okay. They already know it's okay, but it's trying to convince their elders that it's okay. This is that generation. They're already ready for the change, because they're the ones that's demanding the change. That's why I'm hopeful, because they're the ones that are powering through and demanding that we take a listen to what their concerns are and accept them for who they are. That's why I have so much faith in them.
Well, you know that I adore you, and I'm so glad that you contributed to this conversation. It would not have been the same without you. So thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate your perspective. And I think that, you know, I candidly, you know, we have known each other for a while, and I feel like you've always been someone who you don't just offer like a refreshing perspective, but you do it in a really inspiring way. And so I really do just appreciate you sharing that with everybody, and just thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you and also just being able to really share, you know, what my thoughts are. Like I said, I am not a monolith. I do not speak from any particular group. I'm just only speaking from my lived experiences, and also, you know, being also a military veteran, you know, so I have a lot of lived experiences of that too. And at the end of the day, you know, when we serve, we all serve together, right? And so I'm coming from that diverse background. Like, we live together, we fight together, we serve together. And so when we look at what service is, and we look at, we're defending a country that is polarizing, that's problematic. At its root is problematic.
All right, I want to thank my guests today for sharing their insight with us. And I'm incredibly grateful to you for taking the time out of your day to listen to this conversation. I hope it left you better and smarter. If you haven't already, please be sure to subscribe and leave a review for the show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have an idea for a future guest or a particular topic you'd like me to cover, you can email me directly, hello@thinkoutsidethelines.com. Now may you go out into the world today and leave things better than you found them. For more information, please visit thinkoutsidethelines.com.